Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, a psychotherapist and the author of the originator of the Awareness Integration Theory. And hello to Sean, our director in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I will actually share a tip about how to be fulfilled in life and how to regenerate feelings of joy and gratitude while the world might not. Then I will share with you about how to go from anger to calm and joy in the Ask Me segment. I will bring you the latest research on gun violence among youth and possible contribution of the gun violence in media and entertainment on your youth desiring to use gun. I'm excited to bring you Jill Vanderwood. She is an author of 10 books for children and young adults, and she is the 2008 Writer of the Year from the League of Utah Writers and the winner of numerous book awards, including the National Mom's Choice Award. Jill is making a difference for the next generation by tackling the hard topics of affecting kids and their families around the nation, such as drugs, bullying, and now gun safety. In her latest book, Off Target, The Path You Choose, Jill deals in a no-nonsense way with the need for guns to be stored safely away. I'd love to hear from you. So connect with me through my website, fujian.com, and follow my social media and message me with your comments and topics of interest. But first, here's the tip of the week.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at fujian.com or amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
Hello, it's Dr. Fujian again, and this is Tip of the Week. Are you fulfilled in life? I had my first experience with Clubhouse, the social media app, last week, and we talked about how to be committed to the experience of fulfillment in life, regenerated constantly. So we had a great dialogue and I wanted to share it with you. First, let's define fulfillment. The dictionary definition of fulfillment is the act of process of fulfilling a promise or all requirements of a task. And the second definition is the act or process of delivering a product to a customer. So how would that relate to life in general? So we expanded it. The act or process of experiencing the state of happiness, contentment, and being complete with matters and situations that show up in life. It is a transient and dynamic state. So it's not like you get to be fulfilled and then it stays no matter what. So don't take it for granted. It's kind of one of those things that you got to keep regenerating it. The short-term goals and fulfilling them. Another component of being fulfilled is living a regret-free life. To view every situation that we end up not liking, we're thinking that it is a mistake as an experience to learn from. I saw this quote on LinkedIn. God will put you in positions you didn't apply for. I really liked it. I'm not a religious person, but I liked this cup. So view it as if with the information that was available at that time, we did the best that we knew how. And as time passes, we learn more about it and to our experience. So no regrets, only learning from an experience and moving on. Having the wisdom to assess that there are times we need to do something, and other times, our non-action is the most important action. Living a balanced life, a balance between responsibilities, self-care, caring for others, work, play, and giving to the bigger community will lead to fulfillment in life. Being on integrity, doing what you said you would do, keeping your promises, deliver what you said, and clean up when you don't. Trusting yourself and others, and being true to yourself and others is fulfilling. How do we keep experiencing fulfillment while the world around us is full of suffering? Great question. How compassion and empathy can come in and really support you. You can have compassion and empathy toward people around you. Connect with people's souls and acknowledge their needs. Take a moment to see how far you've come, opportunities you have. The ones you've created for yourself, the ones you've created for others, opportunities that have been offered to you. Feel gratitude, grateful for who you are and who you have around you. Offer opportunities to others in any way that you're able to. Lend a helping hand or an ear or a shoulder, someone in need. Adjust your expectations from people around you. Assess what you're in control of and what you're not. Act appropriately on areas that you can do something about and be effective and accept and flow with what you cannot control. Raise the level of curiosity and regenerate excitement, engagement, and joy for yourself and everyone around you. When you go beyond yourself and you are out there to be out there for others, that's when actual essence of fulfillment shows up and gets regenerated all the time. For more observational and integrational skills, go to my book, Life Reset, The Awareness Integration Path to the Life You Want. Hello again, I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I want to thank you for asking your questions in all of my social media, so keep it going. So today I wanted to answer one of your questions. How do I deal with my anger when I'm so committed to be happy and it keeps coming up? And at times it feels like I don't have any type of control. I wake up angry. I go to sleep angry. The minute I'm quiet and I even want to meditate, all that shows up is anger. Now I meditate and exercise and do all the things, and I've created my life in such a way that it's really working for me. What can I do with this anger? Where is it coming from? Well, anger is one of the primary six emotions that comes up. Anger is powerful, is one of most powerful emotions that we have. So it's okay that it's there. And many times it's helpful. It's trying to tell us something, maybe something kind of like an injustice is happening and we need to take care of ourselves. Maybe we need to take a stand for ourselves in our relationships, whether it's an intimate relationship, a work relationship, friendship, of family, and we're not realizing it. And then our anger shows that we got to do something about it. So listening to your anger, it's important. And maybe because you don't like it and you keep pushing it away and saying that it's not important and I don't want it and it's uncomfortable, that you keep pushing it away so you don't listen to what it is that it's telling you. So in order to let go of anger, you first have to acknowledge it and then feel it and then get the message and then release it. Or get the message while you're attempting to release it. So, what are some of the messages that come with anger? Anger, because it's a powerful emotion, sometimes it kind of acts like an umbrella for anxiety, for sadness, for shame, for guilt, any of those anxiety, any of those emotions that might feel a little bit vulnerable to us. We might have the experience of showing anger and having it be under that because maybe that was okay in the community we lived in the family system we lived in, and plus that it makes us powerful, doesn't make us vulnerable. Although when we act angry, then it will also make us vulnerable to the world because it also produces anger for other people who would want to defend themselves or attack us because maybe they felt attacked by your anger. Now, how do you release your anger? Releasing it, some people have comes in their hands, some people comes in their jaws, some people have it in their legs. It shows up in your body as heat, as really intense chemicals and vibrations that really need to be released. So you can run, you can jog, you can hop, you can dance. You could do anything that, like get on a trampoline, and you could do all of these things if you think that your anger comes in your legs and you need to release that type of an energy, like a volatile energy. If it comes to your hands, you can box, you can use those stress balls to just kind of like hold on to it and release it and let go and hold on and let go. You can take ice cubes and go crash it outside on a wall. You could rip newspapers, papers, something that at that moment just like it destroys, but nothing important. And you could definitely punch something soft, like a boxing mat or your pillows or your mattress, but nothing, not your wall. Remember, you don't want to destroy anything and you don't want to harm yourself. And if it comes to your jaws, humming, singing, calling out, deep breathing, exhaling, all of those are really, really helpful. It really supports you to get that energy out of your system. And then when you get that energy out of your system, now look at the voice, now look at the message that shows up for you and look at the underlying emotion that's under it. Is it sadness? Is it anxiety? What is it that is there that you haven't been paying attention to? You need to take care of whatever the message is before you could get the joy coming. Or if you are someone who can compartmentalize it, then go ahead. Acknowledge it that it's there. Tell it. Give it a time that you're going to meet with yourself. So you're going to actually look at that anger and then attend to your work, your relationships, your parties, whatever it is at that moment, experience your joy, and then go back and promise yourself to sit down and look. Even if you're meditating and anger is coming up, just look at it, listen to it, and see what it is. Acting out anger is different. Sometimes you might feel anger and act out immediately. That probably is dangerous for you. So it's important for you to acknowledge it. I'm going to say it again. Acknowledge it, hear the message, release it in a safe way. Acknowledge where it is in your body. Hear the message of what's inside, what's underneath, what is it that your anger is asking you to do for yourself. How do you need to take a stand, set boundaries, shift, do something which it's telling you to do because your system needs it? Or if you're angry about something, but there's nothing you can do about a certain situation which is making you angry, then at least capturing the concept of I'm powerless against this and going into the powerlessness, which is a little bit more of the vulnerable side. And then maybe in going into acceptance of it and looking at it from a different aspect. When you're going to share your anger with a friend, a mate, someone you want to share with, remember, anger is hostile. It's really a volatile energy and it impacts people. So share with them about your anger. Don't dump your anger on people. Because when you do, they go away. They won't have the open heart and an open listening to listen to you. Okay? I'm going to say it for the last time. Acknowledge your anger. Even cherish it. Listen to the message and all the vulnerable emotions that are underneath it. See what you could do about the message. If you could do something, go for it. Handle it. Take care of it. If you don't see any way that you could possibly do something about it, go into an acceptance and compassion and release it from your body with a safe way and safe means so that you don't harm yourself, anyone else. This is Dr. Fujian here again with you, and I wanted to share this research that I got from one of the websites, which is called Every Town, and then other research that have been done in different kind of universities. The deadly impact of guns on children and teens in America. Annually, more than 3,000 children and teens ages 0 to 19 are shot and killed, and 15,000 are shot and wounded. That's an average of 51 American young people every day. And the effects of gun violence extend far beyond those struck by the bullet. An estimated 3 million children witness a shooting each day. Gun violence shapes the lives of the children who witness it, know someone who was shot, or live in fear of the next shooting. Firearms are the leading cause of death for children and teens. This is uniquely an American problem. Compared to other high-income countries, American children aged 5 to 14 are 21 times more likely to be killed with guns. And American adolescents and young adults aged 15 to 24 are 23 times more likely to be killed with guns. When American children and teens are killed with guns, 58% are homicide, more than 1,900 deaths per year. Children are particularly impacted by the intersection of domestic violence and gun violence. For children under age 13 who are victims of gun homicide, 85% of those deaths occur in the home, and nearly a third of those deaths are connected to intimate partner or family. Between 2009 and 2018, 72% of child and teen victim of mass shootings died in incidents connected to domestic violence. Data drawn from 16 states indicate that nearly two-thirds of child fatalities involving domestic violence were caused by guns. Another 36% of child and teen gun deaths are suicide, 1,200 per year. And firearm suicide has been rising dramatically. Over the past decade, the firearm suicide rate among children and teens have increased by 59%. For people of all ages, having access to gun increases the risk of death by suicide by 3 times. Research shows that an estimated 4.6 million American children live in the homes with at least one gun that is loaded and unlocked. The combination of suicidal ideation and easy firearm access can be lethal. When children under the age of 18 die by gun suicide, they're likely to have used the gun they found at home. Over 80% of child gun suicides involve a gun belonging to a parent or a relative. Gun violence manifests in a myriad of ways in American schools, and school shootings have created new anxiety for a younger generation of students. According to an Every Town analysis, there have been at least 549 incidents of gunfire on school grounds from 2013 to 2019. Of these, 347 occurred on the ground of elementary, middle school, and high schools, resulting in 129 deaths and 270 people wounded. While mass shootings like the incident in Sandy Hook Elementary School and more recently Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School and Santa Fe High School are not commonplace, schools are more likely to experience gun homicide and assaults, unintentional shootings resulting in injury or death, in gun suicide and self-harm. All incidents of gun violence in schools, regardless of their intent or victim count, compromise the safety of students and staff. There's a new study shows that the proportion of gun violence relative to other forms of violence in TV dramas also increased 2000 to 2018, with statistical parallels to homicides among U.S. youth. Patrick Jameson and Daniel Romer of the University of Pennsylvania Annenberg Public Policy Center present these findings in the Open Access Journal Plus One on March 17th of this year, 2021. They report that firearm injuries and death are a major public health concern in the U.S. A long-standing hypothesis suggests that increases in gun violence in popular media result in increased real-life gun violence among youth. However, homicide rates among youth have declined in recent decades, challenging this view. In this new study, Jameson and colleagues assert that overall homicide rates are not actually appropriate for exploring the potential influence of entertainment on gun violence. Instead, they say research should focus on trends in the proportion of gun violence compared to other forms of violence. In line with the assertion, the researchers examined trends in the proportion of gun violence compared to other forms of violence in 33 popular TV dramas from 2000 to 2018. Over the same period, they also examined trends in real-life homicides attributable to firearms in different age groups in the U.S. The analysis showed that TV gun use increased over the study period, both in absolute terms and in proportion to other forms of violence. The proportional increase of TV gun violence paralleled trends in rates of homicide, so attributable to firearms, as opposed to other types of homicide, among all age groups, within the strongest statistical relationship seen in youth aged 50 to 24. This kind of correlational study cannot prove causal conclusion about the relationship between TV gun violence and real life gun violence. Nonetheless, the finding appears consistent with the hypothesis that gun violence in popular media may contribute to real life use of guns for violent purposes. A research found that gun use has substantially increased over the past 20 years on prime TV dramas in the US and trend that paralleled the use of firearms in homicide. Just as the entertainment media contributed to the uptake of cigarettes among youth, their findings suggest that it may be doing the same thing when it comes to guns. So parents, grandparents, it is your responsibility how to handle your children's use of gun, how they are close to guns, loaded guns around the house, and the violence that they watch on TV or movies. It is your responsibility to teach them. If you like to play with guns, if you like to do hunting, if you liking to do shooting, you need to be responsible for the children that you have, because the message that you give your children, that's what they pick up, and they might not yet have your wisdom in how to use the gun. So it is important for you to take responsibility. In many of the states, you will be legally responsible regardless. The other factor is that You're also introducing violence to your children. So it is your choice if you're not using this as a toy. Guns are not toys. And if you use them as an adult as a toy, offering them to your children as a toy is really not wise. So we do hold you responsible. And in order to create appropriate parenting style, like any other thing of usage of alcohol, drugs, any of the other things that might harm your children, you might wait until they are fully grown and the frontal cortex is fully grown so they can make a critical choice and appropriate choices in however that they're going to use this. So please take care of yourself and your children. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fuchan Zain, and I am excited to be with Jill Vanderwood. She is the author of 10 books for children and young adults. She is the 2008 Writer of the Year from the League of Utah Writers and the winner of numerous book awards, including the National Mom's Choice Award. Jill is making a difference for the next generation by tackling the hard topics affecting kids and their families around the nation, such as drugs, bullying, and now gun safety. In her latest book, Off Target, The Path You Choose, which is it's the number one, and Jill deals in the no-nonsense way with the need for guns to be stored safely away from minors. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thanks, Fujian. I'm glad to be here.
It was such a pleasure to read your book. It really was. It was, I don't think that people really realize about the pressure that our teens go through in school with this topic of gun and gun safety. And the way you have set up your book, it looks at it from so many different layers that it was kind of like refreshing and opening the mind into looking at all aspects of this, and not only from a teenage position, but from their parents' position, from a legal position. It was really, really a joy and informative to read your book.
Well, thanks. That might be the way to write it so that they could get all perspectives.
Yes. So how did you come up with the idea of the Off Target? What was it that you decided that this is what I need to do and I need to write it for the kids? You didn't write it for parents, although parents can really learn from it, but it's written in a way that it is for the teens to be able to read it and enjoy it and really work through. And you wrote it in a way that asks questions in different types of scenarios where the teen has to actually do some critical thinking to look at what would it be if I choose these options. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, the original idea to write the book came after so many school shootings. And then I heard the teenagers stand up in Parkland, Florida, and stand up to the lawmakers. And I said, if those kids can do something, maybe I can too. I'm a grandmother. I've raised children and I've watched my grandchildren grow up. And it's very scary to think about sending kids to school when there might be danger. So I wanted the kids to realize that they have a choice. And if they know somebody has a gun, they can say something. They can stop the violence. Mm-hmm.
Now, your book is written in real life situations, but it's kind of it's a work of fiction necessarily. I mean, you write in a way that you pick up a scenario, and you take the scenario and you look at all different aspects of how it is to have a teen who shows up at school and a friend, another teen, has access to a gun. And then from there, all these types of scenarios shows up as, plan A, B, C, D, and it just keeps going into a different way of looking at it. What brought you to write it in that form?
When my kids were growing up, they really liked the choose your own adventure type books, because some of my kids were struggling with reading at some point. And when they could read a book where they didn't have to read from cover to cover, then they could say, I'm just going to read this part. So I'm making it so the kids can read one story all the way through. And then if they decide to, they can go back and read a different story all the way through. And then there's illustrations for each story so they can actually see what's going on. But I never put a picture of the main character, because the main character is the reader. So they can put themselves in there. And I also put characters of all other nationalities so that they could find themselves in that situation, no matter what nationality they are.
Right. So if you were going to describe your book to our audience, what would you say? What would they learn from this book?
Off Target is a book for kids so that they can actually feel their choices. I'm thinking that kids don't have the ability too much to make choices, and this puts them in where they have to make very hard choices, and they can make a choice where it turns out very good, and they can make a choice where it turns out very bad. Mm-hmm. But things don't always turn out really good when you have a gun in a child's hand.
What has your experience been working with teenagers or the school system or the parents as you bring this book to them? What is your experience based on their reading it or their thoughts about it when you introduce this type of a book to either the teen or the parents or the school systems?
I haven't really put this into schools yet. I'm working on it now. But I've had people read it, and I've had reviews. And when I entered this book into a couple of different contests, they said, your book is very biased. Why didn't you show the good things about guns? And I'm saying, there isn't anything good about a teenager having a gun on their own, maybe with supervision, but not, there can't be a good thing about that. So I can't show that side.
Yeah, I don't agree with teenagers having a gun either. I mean, bottom line, a gun is made to destroy. It's a toy or a vehicle for destruction or killing. So why should a teenager have that on their own? At the time that a teenager's frontal cortex has not necessarily been built to make all rational decisions and critical thinking and, working through all of the concepts that might happen. And that is exactly what you show in your book. You show in all of the things that would show up for a teen at that moment, which is like a peer pressure or wanting to be liked by your friends. Or it's just exciting and something that you want to experience. Everything that is there, it gets them to do acts that are not, they're not necessarily looking at 10 steps ahead and the conversations that will come, the consequences that will come. They have no idea about that. So you're absolutely right that having a teenager just holding a gun and playing with it and the scenarios that could happen, necessarily there's no benefit into that. I mean, I'm biased in the way that I don't see any benefit in having guns anyway. But, beyond my own bias, looking at even if people are using it as, self-protection or fun or, hunting, which they don't use the small guns for hunting. So if it's there for self-protection, there are a lot of other ways of learning how to protect yourself versus having a gun. What is your experience as teenagers read your book?
I haven't been able to present it to teenagers yet because right when I wrote the book, the pandemic hit, and I haven't been able to go into schools. But I'm working with somebody right now to get my book into schools in Virginia. And he's on the school board there. So he really liked the book and he wants to help me get that into schools.
Yeah, that would be great. I think that would be a great place for your book to be in schools, to for the teenagers to have it, and for parents to actually go through the book with their teenagers. It was really interesting when I was reading it because there's these elements that are there that are very, very emotional, and you can really experience the experience of the teenager as they go through, and all of them, when they get themselves into trouble and what they need to do. And for the first time, they experience harm being happening to one of their friends or animals or any of it. Because I think teenagers get used to these games that they're playing, which is that there's a lot of killing in these games, but it's a game. So they go back 2 minutes later and the same character is there. So it doesn't fit as what, the same game cannot happen in reality. The consequences are a lot. If you harm someone or kill somebody, they don't just pop up 10 minutes later, at the same, at the next game for you. There is a detrimental consequence. And I think part of what I was also seeing in your book is to bring that reality into the person's world, which is, hey, it's not just, okay, I'm just going to shoot this and it's, 10 minutes later, I'll finish the game and I'll come back and it's right there again, right?
Yeah. They actually are hurt and they do have to go to the hospital in some situations.
Yes. So what is it that you wanted, like, how did you even get to the gun violence? And I know that there were shootings, but why did you pick this topic? Yeah, I know you've worked with different areas with parents and children. So why this at this point?
It just came to my mind that it was time for me to do this. My main goal is to use my voice to make a difference. And if I'm a writer, sure, I can write fiction that's fun and silly, and I have done that. But I decided that it's time for me to address some serious topics. And I'm a grandmother who's witnessed kids growing up and they have to deal with these things. But my family members have had a hard time making choices. Some of even my older children are saying, well, what should I do? When something gets hard, they need to make choices. And if they start when they're young, making choices, then it'll be easier through their life.
And in your research, as you've done for this book, what are some of the information that you've gathered in order to create this book? Can you share with us some of the research of your knowledge that you've acquired based so that it helps you to write this book about gun violence, about what happens with the children? Because there was a lot of also legal conversations that were in the book, which were very good in teaching the teenagers about the consequences that happens. But beside that, anything you want to share with us around the research that you've done?
Well, I looked up things on the internet, of course. I wanted to find out what it feels like when you get shot. And the things that I found were that it feels like you're burned, maybe something hot, but they don't realize they've been shot at first until they see their own blood. And they told about how they felt when they got shot and the trauma to their bodies and realizing that they've been shot and they've been hurt. And then I looked up information about leg wounds and arm wounds and different parts of your body and if you could recover from that and how much blood you could lose, how much time it would take before you lost too much blood. And you could die from a simple gunshot wound if you let yourself just sit there and bleed out. And then I looked up consequences and I talked to lawyers about the consequences and of course, I found out right away that every state has different rules. So I was kind of going by a scenario where they're in a state where they have these certain rules, because some states like Idaho, where I live, you can carry a gun and conceal without a permit, and others you can't. And sometimes when a child has been injured, the mother will go to jail. And in other states, they'll just say that was an accident and nothing happens. So that's the way it is in the country. There are no set rules on guns.
And are the rules different for children versus adults?
Sometimes when a child gets a hold of the parent's gun, the parent goes to jail. That's why I say they could go to jail, because it depends on which state they're in, really. They could go to jail, or they could just get a slap on the hand and put that gun away.
So it is, most states, the parents are responsible for their children's behavior. And if something happens, they will be also reprimanded, in a sense, because they didn't protect the child, or they didn't, secure the guns in a way that the child would do. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
And not every state, though. California is one of your more strict states on gun regulations.
Yeah. But
majority of homes have guns in them, and a lot of homes that kids are growing up in don't have any kind of lock on their gun. So that's what I'm kind of going for. Keep your kids safe. It's okay to have a gun if that's what you want to do. I don't have a gun. My dad always had guns. I never touched one of his guns. I never even thought about it.
And what are your thoughts about, because part of the scenario also in the book was that the gun was beside the bed, where a lot of people, because of their protection, they hold the gun close to them, especially when they're sleeping, because they're assuming that if there's a sound or something, if there's an intruder in their house, they want the gun to be loaded right beside them. And this is how many times the children get involved in it, because of the fear of the parents. They don't think like, okay, if there's an intruder, I got to now go to the safe, now load the gun, and then be ready, because by that time it could be late. So they keep the gun usually very close, loaded to them. Most of the injuries that have happened is due to this fact. It's not like the children actually went and opened the safe and loaded it. And not that they don't do that, but usually the accidents did not happen that way. That was those scenarios are more intentional, where the teenagers are intentionally doing something, yeah, versus just, oh, there's a gun here and I could do that. So based on your research and everything you've done, what would be your solution or suggestions to parents who, want to have the gun beside them loaded, for protection? However, they do have, small children or even teenagers at home.
Well, there are gun locks that you can get that you can just lock it. And a lot of companies will give those out for free. And, that's what I would say. I would say lock it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what you would do if there was an intruder, but the most common thing now is that the child gets it. They almost always know where the gun is kept. It might be in the closet, it might be under the bed. But you need to maybe put the ammunition somewhere else, or you can get it quickly, but it's not in the gun. That would be another one, I would say.
Okay. So there's each parent can figure out creatively in how, based on their household and based on the child age that is at home, in how to keep their children safe, but have access to that for immediate protection if they not need it. Again, we're not talking about shotguns were used for hunting, because a lot of times when we talk about guns, people keep thinking, but it's a right because we want to go hunt. We're not talking about hunting guns. We're talking about, we're not talking about rifles. We're talking about small guns, which are being utilized because of self-protection. And obviously this past year, a lot more guns were sold. So a lot more of the families, they decided because of their self-protection, they wanted to have that. And most of these people have children. And if it comes to an education of children, like if the parents, they, you know, the kids were at an age that they could also be educated, not necessarily to be taught how to use a gun, not education in that realm, but education in self-protection and what are some of the things that they cannot touch and those are the reasons for not touching. What would you suggest on that based on the research you've done for the book?
Well, I would suggest that they do educate their children on guns and the dangers if they want to have the gun. I've heard of people kids taking it out of their mom's purse and shooting somebody. And so they're very easy to access, but at least let them know this is not a toy and maybe demonstrate to them what a gun can do. That might be a good way to do it. If they know the harm that can come from it, if they're not careful, then maybe that would solve part of it. I know there's hunter education that they can teach people how to use a rifle. And they know that when I took a conceal and carry class, they taught us the dangers and how to handle a gun, but we never touched a gun in that class. We just talked about guns. Mm-hmm.
So if you were going to share with our audience some of the things you've learned from your research in these classes, what is it that you would say as far as the consequences of shooting a gun when it's inappropriate?
Well, I showed the consequences in the book where in one case, a dog was shot. Another case, a boy was hiding because he was afraid he was going to get shot. And then in another case, one of their friends got that. They were going down the steps with a gun and somebody bumped from behind and the gun shot the girl. And then the dad came in the door, "What are you doing?" And he was so startled that he shot his dad in the leg. Those are some of the consequences that I learned and that I decided to show. And also I read stories about kids who took guns in their backpack to school. So in one case, I had the boy have a gun in the backpack and it accidentally went off and shot the ground, but it nearly shot somebody. And I heard about a kindergartner who took a gun for show and tell, a real gun. So they need to know those are real and that they can't touch them somehow.
So one of the ways is looking at how the gun accidentally can get fired off. So teaching them, first of all, putting the gun in a position that is it cannot undo accidentally. To the other part is that when the kids are out and they think they're shooting in an open range, but they're not necessarily seeing what's behind that open range. And it could be people and animals behind it that could get hurt. And the other part is that they get excited about something and they're not trained in order to use a gun while they're getting excited. And at any point, that type of excitement and anxiety can create them not shooting where they think they should be. And it's like a startle response that would get them to fire, which will accidentally get a lot of people into danger and even possible death, not only like wounding and injuring and possible death. So if you wanted to say or share something with the parents, what is it that you would want to say to them?
I would like to say that in some states, if your child takes your gun and somebody gets hurt, you can be charged with the crime. And if they go to school with the gun, you can be charged with that crime. So you don't want to have this in the hands of a child. It's fine to train the child with the gun and practice with them, but they shouldn't have it without your supervision. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't have guns because that's their right. And we don't want to take that away, but I'm saying that children shouldn't have guns on their own.
What is the benefit of a child having a gun, even under the supervision of a parent?
Some parents are just really, really enjoy guns. And so they like to take their sons or daughters out and practice shooting. And they have the right to do that. That's legal. If you're in a place, not a rural, not a place where there's population, but out in the country or go deer hunting or whatever they do, they have that right. And so they need to train the child because they shouldn't be on their own with a gun.
So what I'm hearing from you is if the choice is to have this equipment in your life, then you better get trained very well and train your children very well and know the ramifications and the parameters that the, you know, you want to use this vehicle, whether it's a car or a gun or whatever it is, you better know how to handle it and in order to minimize damage in all around level. That's what I'm hearing from you, because if you don't, then definitely there's going to be harsh consequences. And this is for people who want to have it. And the people who are against violence, no matter what, then they also got to look at is if you're not trained that well yourself, but you just get scared and just bring gun into your home, that the consequences are much harder. And the reason I say this is because this past year, last year, there was this frenzy of just everybody going and buying guns, and they weren't trained for it. And there were a lot of people who were just like feeling a bit secure just by having this thing around them. But the point is, if you're not trained well, and an intruder is very trained in how they're going to use it, you're actually buying one for them, because they're going to immediately like dismantle it from your belonging because they know how to utilize it and that you don't. So it's more like you know, people who just go get something without necessarily knowing all the ins and outs of it and what the ramifications are. And mostly they get themselves into trouble versus actually utilizing it into their benefit. And I'm even talking about adults who, you know, suddenly get scared and they figure the best way is to just go buy a gun.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that you're right. I think they should go and get some training, because I think, have you ever been in a really fearful situation? Well, all of a sudden somebody broke into your house, you're going to freeze up. I was sitting on my couch one time with the blinds open, and I fell asleep, and when I woke up, somebody was looking in my window. And instead of me getting up and doing something, I just froze. So you have to learn how to deal with your fear, especially around a gun, because you have to know how to handle it.
Definitely. Any words of wisdom for the last conversation, last minute?
Well, I was just thinking that in my research, I found that almost every shooting, somebody knew about it ahead of time. With the Parkland High School shooting, the brothers would play video games together. And the older brother said, "I'd like to take a gun and shoot up a school." And he thought he was kidding. The brother thought he was talking about the game or something. And he actually did it. So you need to listen. If you hear somebody say something, or you see it on the internet, a picture of a kid with a gun, or they say, "I want to kill somebody," or "I'm going to get even," you need to listen to that. Even if you think it might not be true, it might be true.
Thank you very much. So everyone, Jill Vanderwood, please go check out her website, which is JillVanderwood.com, and get the book, Off Target, The Path that You Could Choose. And it's about gun violence, especially for children. It has a lot of illustration, and it's beautifully done and written with a lot of different types of of scenarios that your team can go toward different types of scenarios and look at how it actually gets impacted and the consequence that they have. Thank you so much, Jill, for being with us.
Thank you, Bijan.
And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.